Welcome to the Work is Weird Now podcast. Whether you're nearing retirement, entering the workforce for the first time, or caught somewhere in the confusing muddle in the middle, you're likely sensing it and you're probably living it. We know we are, and we want to know why. Listen in as we interview experts and everyday people like you to find out how best to navigate the ever-growing weirdness of work in the modern age.
Our guest today is Ellen Donnelly, founder of The Ask, coach for entrepreneurs and creator of Monday Morning's Publications, a fortnightly newsletter exploring the post-9-to-5 working world and shift to mass entrepreneurialism. So Ellen, welcome.
Hi Dan, hi Alice.
So we always review all of our weird work moments of the week. Mine this week was I've started a new in-house role part-time, which is going really well. And that includes a lot of the implementation side of the work. And I had to share my very first LinkedIn post from the company profile with over 60,000 followers. And I was sweating. I'm nearly 40 and I had to message my friend and be like, why does this make me nervous when I've been doing it for 20 years? And she replied with one comment that I wanted to share that I loved. Just swallow the frog, just gulp and go. And I really, really enjoyed that. So I thought that might be a good one when anyone has like a little nervy moment. Alice, what's yours?
I feel like I'm swallowing the frog right now in the literal sense and that my entire family is sick. So apologies for the raspy voice. So my work is weird moment this week was twice I had situations where I was on the phone with clients during effectively noisy things in my life. So once was a client calling me on Thursday night when I was cooking dinner and you could actually hear the onions sizzling at the same time. And the other was when I went to pick up my daughter from school in the middle of a call, sort of jumped in the car with this client on the phone, got there. And then she was like, can I hear children playing in the background? And I had this thought where, you know, there was a time not so long ago where I would have done everything in my power to block out that noise, to make it seem like there really was nothing going on. I actually had one situation where my husband met me after a meeting and he had my daughter in her pushchair. And because the client walked out of the office with me, I pretended like I didn't know them. So as I walked past them. So how far we've come from that into a situation where I felt quite at ease with my life going on in the background. So for better or worse, those two things are overlapping.
Oh, they've blended, haven't they? The world's blended.
That blend is similar actually to the one I had in mind for this week, which is I'm quite like, I get to the office, I leave the office. I, in many ways, being self-employed, I act like an employee, you know, I go to a base of work. But this week it's felt quite flexible and that blend has felt really true. Like I was in the sauna on Monday, 11 a.m. and then I was at an event in the middle of the day talking about why women should own land. And I was doing a therapy session in the meeting room and all of these things, you know, leaving to go to the gym at 3 p.m. And don't get me wrong, I'm doing a lot of work outside of those events, like working late sometimes. But that flexibility is something I feel really grateful to have achieved. And I know it's really important to lots of people. We'll probably get into some of that today. It's not laziness. It's just the ability to be able to tap in, tap out of work for the times that it suits us. So I really felt like, oh, I'm doing that this week.
That's so interesting. I'm actually having some coaching on that. So I quit full-time employment. I finished up October and started my own business. And it would be 10 to 9 and I would be like, oh my God, my laptop's not on. Like if I go to a gym class at 10 a.m. or whatever, I'm unpicking the fact that that's not the right time to do it. Or actually it's okay to be able to do that because you're working at, you know, it's working around your life. So it's such a fascinating one, I think, and one to really takes time to unravel from the normal routine.
And I think actually when you're used to the opposite, I always employable at this point because I've been out of the workforce for so long. So actually going in and having someone look at, you know, with question at me if I left my desk at 10 a.m. to go to a gym class would be something I'd find very hard to adapt back into.
Once the pendulum swung, it's hard to go back.
Exactly.
So rather than start our interviews with asking you about your career journey in a conventional way, we like to ask everybody to tell us, are you where you thought you'd be at this point in your career? And can you give us a little bit more detail about why or why not?
I would say when I was reflecting on this question that the answer is yes. And that's because I had this sense of, I want to run my own business in the sort of personal development business education space. I had that sense in my early 20s, so 10 years ago, really, that that would be my future. And the way I got here was probably less formulaic than I might have imagined it would be. But the vision I had for myself of working with clients one-to-one, of creating some sort of media like the newsletters I have today, of having a personal brand, of coaching, of supporting people with their careers. I think I'm fortunate that I had that vision and was able to see it through. And so there are so many days where I think, oh, I wish I was further ahead. I wish this had happened by now. You know, I wish this part of my life or business was easier. But then if I step back and go big picture, this is what I wanted. And so I'm really grateful to be able to support people to figure out that vision for them and see if we can make that happen as well. And I'm glad that I'm proof that it can work.
Love that. I actually love when you responded yes. It's what I envisioned from 10 years ago and I'm here. How does that like really feel?
Yeah, feeling into it is something I don't do enough. So that is, it's a really important thing to be able to take that moment of gratitude. Because you can't create new things in your life if you're not grateful for what you already have. So yeah, it is great. It's very rewarding. Hard work, but it's rewarding.
So it was the ask that you started first and then Monday mornings came second.
Correct. Yeah, the ask I started in 2020 after training as a coach and having already had, like I say, this sort of vision as to what that business might look like and how it might exist in the world. And then just sort of put the pieces in place over the last 5 years. And it was when I realized I can't coach everybody. And the shifts that are happening in the workforce are so much greater than just helping people who I describe as like micro businesses or one person businesses. Helping them set up shop to work for themselves has been the majority of the work I do in the ask. But there's this other narrative going on that I started to detect, which is the 9 to 5 is becoming an outdated concept for many, very difficult to maintain for especially women who have caring responsibilities. They're not the only people it's difficult for, of course. And seeing the mass layoffs, seeing the uncertainty in the economy, the shift to social media driven online business owners just happening all around me, I was like, there's a bigger conversation here that needs to be had. And that conversation doesn't fit neatly into my one-to-one coaching conversations or even group calls. It's more societal, it's more systemic. And that's where Monday mornings for me was an opportunity to create a platform to have discussions that don't belong solely to the work I do as a coach. They belong to all of us because, as your podcast is called, work is weird now. And I believe that work is broken. And so Monday mornings is my attempt to tell some of those stories and dig into some of the research and bring more awareness to things that we might subtly notice about what's going on, but not give it a proper attention to. So Monday mornings is only 3 months old.
What has been the biggest surprise for you? So what maybe you went into it thinking that you wanted to tell some of these stories. Have there been things that have emerged from that process that have really opened your eyes to new things that you didn't know of?
The act of writing about different subjects. So just to maybe give a bit more flavor to what Monday Mornings is, it's a publication about the future of work being more entrepreneurial. By that, I mean less and less people are in stable corporate jobs. They're working as freelancers, as gig economy workers, as business owners. The semantics are far ranging, and I really use that term mass entrepreneurialism to cover that whole spectrum. And digging into the research, I think one of the biggest surprises is actually this trend, this shift is not new. Like, it's been happening since the early 2000s to 2010, when like the rise of the gig economy sort of started to kick into place. That is when a lot of these workers were put onto contractual relations, and when consumers like ourselves started to really have an appetite to buy from other individuals, be it at staying in an Airbnb or having an Uber driver or selling something on a marketplace, right? So this kind of consumer-to-consumer transaction model has been growing at the same time as the like hype around entrepreneurship really went through a huge boom in that period. You know, we had the likes of WeWork, and the UK particularly had lots of tech unicorns. And so I sort of started to notice that shift in my early career when I was working with startup founders. But digging into the research now, I'm like, oh, wow, this isn't like a brand new thing. This has just been trickling away for a good decade and a half. And I think this shift is happening so much faster now, given AI, given layoffs and political uncertainty. So there's so many factors at play. And I feel like I've just scratched the surface on what I'm learning and what I want to share.
Are some of those, I mean, you mentioned obviously the technology is going to have a huge role in driving entrepreneurialism. Everything is more accessible. People can build their own things a lot more easily. I'm curious if the sort of degradation of trust in institutions, do you think, has also been a big part of this?
It's a really big one. There's a term that I learned, again, I'm learning a lot doing this, which is part of the reason I wanted to do it, around stakeholder capitalism, which you may be familiar with, I'm sure many listeners are, but it's the idea that a business doesn't have to exist for the profit of its shareholders. It can exist for the good of its employees, its suppliers, the planet. And so when you talk about trust, a lot of the trust that's been eroded is in the contract that a lot of people feel that they have with their employer. You know, this contract of, I'm going to show up, give you my available working hours, and in return, you're going to provide me with job security, learning and development, a safe, happy place to work, pension, retirement planning, all the above. That social contract, I believe, has been eroded because most people do not receive that. The way that the economy cycles work these days, most people's jobs kind of get reshuffled or let go or whatever. Most people I know have been made redundant, and I'm in my early 30s, and that's quite unusual, I think, to have had like that cycle happen to so many people. And then if we come back to that stakeholder capitalism idea, a lot of the Gen Z workers have the lowest like trust in organizations and corporates that has ever been held. And that's because they see the damage that those businesses are doing to the planet. Mm. And they do not see a path where working for those organizations will provide them with income security to get on the housing ladder, to live the dream or the life that we were sort of sold that we could have. So I do believe that trust is a big part of this factor, yeah.
Absolutely. And I've personally managed a whole cohort of, you know, Gen Z throughout my career. And just when I was at the early stages of my career, you know, I was taught that you don't hop jobs, you know, moving around, it's a negative, it seems like you don't commit, you're not trustworthy. Whereas now the approach from that generation is they want to move around every couple of years. They want to go and experience different cultures, different businesses, different sizes, you know, locations. And that ability to move, if they are within a business, is it's actually what they thrive off. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a very, very different approach to work. And we're not really that far on in terms of time.
No. And you weren't wrong for thinking that, Dan. Like, I used to work in executive headhunting, which is senior recruitment. And we were told to discard CVs where people would have moved around too often. You know, if there were big gaps on the CV, if there were too many different jobs on the CV, if somebody dared to be a generalist, have lots of different careers, that was a no-no. If they were self-employed, masquerading as a consultant, that was a no-no. And so it's so ironic that now I help people achieve generalist, self-employed, career hoppy types of work lives. And I think that is representative of how I felt working in those roles. Don't get me wrong, I enjoyed many parts of it, meeting so many people, going out for lunches, meeting clients, like the money was decent, but I felt like I was being pigeonholed into this very specific box of what my role was, and I was doing it to others. I was told top down, this is what we hire people for, this is what good looks like, do not deviate from the norm. And then I worked in companies as a head of talent. And as a hiring manager, you're fighting a battle with the people who are hiring their team, saying, hey, what about this candidate? They don't have XYZ experience from XYZ company on your dream list, but here's their transferable skills. Here's why they could be great. And the same thing would happen. You know, the same lens would be cast over a CV. And if it didn't fit that mold, don't want to know. And I've just seen the pendulum swing different ways over the last 10, 12 years of working in this field, which is one day the employer seems to have all the control, one day the employees seem to have all the control. And when I was in the recruitment world, like, it'd be very interesting whether the economy was down, you'd call people, or they'd be calling you for jobs. Do you have any jobs? Do you have any jobs? When the economy was good, you'd be calling people, hey, have you considered changing jobs? Slam down the phone. Mm-hmm. It's such a different landscape depending on where we're at. And I think that's changing for good now.
When I look back on my career, I think I was always a bit entrepreneurial. I always had a real sort of sense of adventure and willingness to take myself out of my comfort zone, things like that. And I guess over the course of the last 15 years, I've had so many people come to me and say, I want to set up on my own. Can you give me some advice? And I've had conversations where I've thought, I just don't think this person has what it takes. And in most cases, they were back in employment pretty shortly after that. And I guess my question to you is, I assume you have to believe that everybody has the traits within them to become an entrepreneur. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing what you're doing. And I'm just curious, what are those traits and what do people need to tap into?
Great question. It's a very, I have a really mixed view. So on one hand, I do not believe everybody should work for themselves. I do believe, like you say, Alice, that certain people are less cut out for it. Therefore, when I coach people, when I filter for who I'm going to coach, I very much look for those traits. And sure enough, when I ever take clients who I had question marks about, the coaching doesn't succeed in the same way, because I can only give someone so much. You know, you have to give so much of yourself to your business to make it work. I can guide, I can direct, I can inspire, but I'm not doing the doing. So you might think, well, you talk about the shift to mass entrepreneurialism, you must think everybody can be an entrepreneur, you think everybody should be an entrepreneur. I actually don't think everybody should be an entrepreneur. I just see that a lot of people are becoming entrepreneurs for sometimes the right reasons, sometimes the wrong reasons, sometimes voluntarily, sometimes involuntarily. And my whole spiel with Monday mornings is I'm trying to get people to wake up to the fact that if we all become entrepreneurs, we need different protections, we need different ways of working, we need different perceptions of work and entrepreneurship. Because like you say, Alice, some people will struggle and it's hard work. And so if you're already a misfit for it because of XYZ reason, be it you have like one of the big five personality traits. A lot of people know MBTI, but big five is a more scientifically valid one. One of the five big five personality traits, they like did a study of all the potential personality traits and they put them into five categories, is neuroticism. And people who are neurotic, so particularly anxious, particularly paranoid, just find things difficult. If you're really neurotic, you're going to really struggle in entrepreneurship. That's one example. So I would love to see a world where there was enough alternative options for people to work. And then for those who want to work for themselves, enough provisions and protections.
Well, shall we shift on to what have been some of the key learnings from the ASK that you've learned over the past 5 years?
So I set up the ASK because of a problem I saw in my recruitment and head of talent role, which was smart, talented, entrepreneurial, but doesn't mean they are entrepreneurs, but people who have, like you said, Alice, they have this desire for taking on more, they're ambitious, they maybe think differently. A lot of the people I met in that environment felt really lost when it came to their career because they looked at the corporate path and they didn't see a lot of opportunity that excited them. They looked at the company building path, and a lot of the rhetoric at that point in time, pre-pandemic, was build a company, get VC funding, go big, you know, big or bust. And I felt like there was this missing piece in the middle of those two alternative paths that we were told were successful, which was more of this on your own terms, entrepreneurial pursuits, but doesn't mean you're trying to build a big business. You could just want to build a business or a stream of businesses around the things that you love. And so around the same time that I started the ASK, there was more mainstream awareness of multi-hyphenism. I don't know if you know, like Emma Gannon wrote a book about the multi-hyphenate method. So that really inspired my thinking, as well as just all the conversations I'd had with people who wanted this thing and they couldn't put their finger on it and they couldn't describe it. And I knew I wanted it. And I was really inspired by the creator economy at this time, people who were building businesses around their brands and selling services and products via YouTube and speaking arrangements and so on. And so my learnings from the ASK have been that there is this sort of underserved portion of society who want to work for themselves and who want to do it on their own terms, who don't want stakeholders or investors. They also don't want a boss, but they might be open to part-time work or freelance work for an organization because they're open to being told what to do in some of their week. And some of the time, like you, Dan, you've taken this kind of hybrid approach. I would love to see more people able to achieve that for themselves, that blend. There's been many through lines of the work that I do, but a big one is people having to choose themselves, meaning if you want all the things I described, it's an amazing setup, but you won't find somebody tap you on the shoulder and say, hey, do you want to just like run these various income streams and have these different clients? You have to go out and really like believe in yourself and put your name out there and take risks and feel the pain of rejection from time to time. So that's a big one. The other one is this kind of clarity and action cycle that I take people through. So a lot of people stay stuck in motion because they don't have clarity about what they want. And so I kind of help them get unstuck through taking action and then reviewing whether that thing is working or not. And then a big one is also the kind of thought leadership, personal brand piece. So I spend a lot of time with clients going, what do you really care about? What do you know? What have you learned from your prior experience? Because by the way, most of my clients, they're not 18, right? They're 28, they're 45, whatever. They have life and work experience that they're building ideas and beliefs from. And they're turning those ideas and their beliefs into services or into thought leadership or books. And I'm really helping people like find the self-expression to stand out and to make an income from what they think and what they know. And that's such an unusual type of business, but it's becoming really common today. But, you know, 20 years ago, that wasn't a way to make money. So I'm really proud to be able to be a part of that shift and really enjoy that type of work.
Yeah, absolutely. And like the rise of the coach now, you know, if you're on Instagram, every second story ever is a coach. And it's almost a saturated market in your world. But it also shows the rise of the need for it, because like you say, there is the shift to mass entrepreneurialism, but also just muddling your way through life, like making big decisions, pivoting out of a corporate or pivoting in whatever it may be. The role of the coach now is really, really.
So I'm approaching the age where I would start to worry about losing a job if I were in the workforce. So I'm 46 and I have a business partner who's in his early 50s, and he's worked for himself for years, but he's very aware that at this point he's probably not as employable as he once was because he's effectively too old. Do you give different advice to people that age who are looking to, you know, leave the workforce and do something for the rest of their years towards retirement or even beyond than you would somebody, as you referenced, in their late 20s or early 40s?
Yeah, I'm glad you bring this up. I think the different age brackets have a different experience of the working world and then also entrepreneurship. That said, the more experience somebody has, the stage of life that they're at, the same rules apply, really. The same, you have to know yourself, you have to know what your goals are, what it is that you care about, how do you enjoy working, what are the conversations you want to be having, what are the networks you want to be tapping into, what sort of services do you want to deliver, how much do you want to earn. It's like micro business setup, pretty similar depending on if you're 80 or 20. I've had clients not in their 80s, maybe one day, in their 60s all the way down to their 20s. And sometimes, you know, the references that I'll use in a session might change, their tech savviness might change, but not always. You know, there's certainly many, many people in their 50s and above who have the most they could give to an employer. Like they're at their intellectual prime, they're at their leadership prime. And the ageism, especially in tech, is another big factor, I believe, driving this shift to entrepreneurship, because a lot of those people, my parents included, like they'd be really happy in roles that are a fit for them where they're respected. But sometimes that's not possible. The flexibility isn't there. They've got aging parents, whatever it is. And so the goals might change. Yes, the goal might be actually, I'm not trying to build income security at this stage of life. I'm just trying to like do enough to enjoy my working hours to chip away at my pension pot or whatever that is, versus if I work with a person in their 20s, maybe wealth building is more of a priority. But yeah, people want to feel significant. People want to feel fulfilled. They want to work with clients they love. They want to earn good money for the time that they put in. I think that's true of all ages and demographics.
So there's also some things that are happening right now that feel like quite a shift back in favor of this sort of ruthless organization. So we've had Trump signing a number of executive orders that are, first of all, kind of unpicking years of DEI initiatives in the workforce. We've also got loads of companies now mandating back to the office. I'm just wondering what you think will be the effect on some of the issues you're talking about in terms of mass entrepreneurship. Will we see more of it? Will we see less of it? What do you, how do you think it will impact that?
Yeah, I think the US, the protections that workers get under the Republican government are slightly different because they put the decision-making power in the hands of the organizations rather than mandate what from a governmental level what has to happen. And so we will see much more of what you said, Alice, which is companies rolling back initiatives that previously were maybe mandated, like DE&I initiatives, ESG and sustainability initiatives. I don't know, to be honest, all of them, but I'm guessing things to do with parental leave, like all of the things, all of the potential protections that workers might enjoy, or if not protections and things that they might feel proud to be working at that company because of what they're doing in this space or how they feel seen and understood in that space. A lot of those things I think will shift. And I do, my gut is yes, it will increase entrepreneurialism because people are having a worse time with their employer. And I'll add to your list of gripes, the recent Mark Zuckerberg fiasco are saying, hey, companies need to be more masculine. And, you know, I live in a very, in a social media bubble. Whenever I go on Instagram, it's female founders, it's female empowerment messaging. You know, it's lots of people who are against what he's talking about. So I'm only seeing the pushback, but the pushback is big. And women at the moment, American women, the ones I know and see, are particularly unhappy about what's going on at the governmental and employer level. And I can only really see working for themselves, setting up shop online, doing work they love or coaching or whatever the business they can build is. I can only see that becoming a more viable or appealing alternative. Do I, again, think that's right for everybody? No, but I do think that's what's happening.
So the emerging generations tend to have more entrepreneurial skills because they've been forced to, because they have a less reliable sort of trajectory in terms of their careers than maybe older people have because they've been able to enjoy that kind of stable working environment for longer. Do you see there being more of a sort of gender divide emerging around entrepreneurialism? I'm sure there is one now to some extent at the moment, but I think, you know, just for the reasons that you cite and that the things that's the macro trends that seem to be happening, do you think we'll have a real glut of men in corporations and women in entrepreneurial roles moving forward?
An interesting divide. I have some stats of things I've read through Monday morning's research, like the pandemic significantly impacting women's ability to stay in jobs or find jobs. Women with caring responsibilities, particularly because of the cost of childcare during that time being unaffordable to like not stay at home. And the shift to many companies offering remote only roles at that time for less educated women, often men, having to step back and say, well, I can't find one of these remote jobs that is going to hire me. I'm going to have to create my own. Did that happen to men as well? I'm sure. I think one of the gender points on entrepreneurship that I can maybe talk to is I noticed this back in, I want to say 2016-ish, was the number of men I met with the ambition to build these scalable big companies with funding driven by technology, you know, mass domination kind of vibes. Mm-hmm. And the contrast to the number of women who wanted that same type of organization. Many of the women I met wanted more of the, I'm going to call it quote unquote lifestyle business. That term could be seen as derogatory. I don't mean it in that way. But I think the appetite for entrepreneurship for many women is I want to do it in a way that fits me and my life and allows me to earn well, but I'm not necessarily trying to take over the world and become a billionaire. Whereas I meet a lot of men who, when I tell them about my business, which is doing well, you know, 5 years in, lots of clients, good reputation, I'm not a millionaire, you know. And whenever I talk to a man about my business, they try and give me advice to how to scale faster. And I'm like, that's not my goal. If that was all, I would have done these things. Thank you. I'm a business coach. I do recognize those opportunities. I'm not blind to them, but they forget to filter for desire, appetite, you know, life goals and so on. So I don't have a crystal ball, but my sense is there will be more and more women who choose that type of entrepreneurship. And I'm seeing the tide turn for men as well, where more of them are going, yeah, that looks quite nice. Like, I don't have to do the big boom or bust type of entrepreneurship, which is like almost you either win or you fail, right? It's quite a binary choice often for the VC businesses versus this more lifestyle micro business entrepreneurship. It's a long game. It's sustainable. You can make it work in different ways. And I think that's the future, that like for both genders, in my opinion.
It's probably about what the person's definition of success is. And that's where your coaching, I suppose, comes in, is that if you figure that out, do you want to be a millionaire? Great. Well, then that's going to be your point of success. Is it actually balanced? Is it only working, you know, X amount of hours per week or these days per week? Is it, it's defining that point of success, because there's so many different facets of it. And then, yeah, like you say, people make that judgment on you could scale to this amount, but that's not what I want to do, you know.
And there are many women out there who want a big company and who want to be a billionaire. Would love to coach more of those women. I just don't see it as much.
And if we expect women, if women become a larger portion of the entrepreneurs, what does that actually mean for the future of business? Does it change the nature of organizations versus sort of emerging technologies, new ideas, things like that? Does that injection of feminine energy create products and services that are different from what's coming out of big corporations?
That's a nice way to look at it. Like, could there be new innovative solutions that get created because these women have taken their careers and their, you know, innovation into their own hands and built without the corporate structures? I hope so. That would be a really nice aftermath of that. My fear, if I'm honest, is that the funding and the R&D budgets and the grants and everything goes into these bigger organizations with, you know, existing infrastructures and product development and all of this kind of big picture stuff that happens in the economy stays in the hands of these big businesses where less women work. So there's less, not saying right now less women work there, but if this shift continues in the way we've been talking about, then the fear I have is that we're going to feel even less represented by mainstream culture, society, media, products. You know, women's health is a good example where a lot of products and health changes are not tested through women, and then the women who are working with themselves might stay in a relatively like, I'm going to be a coach, I'm going to be a therapist, I'm going to be a mentor, I'm going to be selling time and services with other women often. And so are they creating new innovative products and services? Like, again, I'm talking in such extreme, like, it's the purposes of painting a picture. My hope is that what you said, Alice, happens. My fear is that it might be more the other way.
Interesting. Yeah. And for some of the, I was reading through some of your Monday morning briefings, that there was things that we've touched on. You know, there was the labor briefing from 24, and that mass drop is significant, isn't it?
The drop of women leaving corporate. There's a graph that you're referring to that McKinsey put together through, speaking to lots of their organizations and their client base about female talent retention, pay, all of the things that we measure. And they just got to this kind of age where women's participation in the workforce just massively declined, and that has accelerated since the pandemic. There's another interesting graph in this think tank research called the UK Women's Budget Group, and it shows the women with caretaking responsibilities who are out of work due to, we think in the data it's because they're caring for children, but it's not always clear who they're caring for. But in the age bracket of like 30 to 45, huge jump of women out of the workforce. And if you think about it, we're all in that age bracket roughly. That's when we're at our best for work. It's when we have the most to give. So it's a shame that the employment structures, the employment culture today is making women feel that they don't fit or that they are actually forced out. I have far too many stories of women who are made redundant, fired, whatever it is, whilst being pregnant, whilst announcing a pregnancy, whilst coming back from a maternity leave. And this is why I had to start Monday mornings. And it's such a small thing that I could do, but, you know, I've run another business. So I would love for more people to be sharing these stories and thinking about ways to support. And there are many organizations set up to support this, but yeah, we just need more. We need more governmental attention as well.
For me, the thing that the pandemic did was actually it revealed a secret that maybe none of us quite knew was true until the pandemic happened, which is that we can actually do it, right? We can actually work from home and also look after our kids, not necessarily at the same time, but just with that flexibility, we can actually manage around picking them up from school or, you know, attending to a teenager's crisis in the moment when it happens if we need to. And I think the big challenge that I have with these back to work mandates is that the cat's out of the bag, right? We all know we don't need to be in the office, right? So to suggest that we somehow need to, and to do that in a way that existed before the pandemic, it just feels like a bold-faced lie, right? It just feels like we're all just pretending like the reality that we could actually do this from home is not there. Whereas I think what would need to happen from my perspective, and I would be interested in your take on this, Ellen, is the office needs to become something different, right? So it needs to become a place where that actually maximizes that social interaction in a real intentional way and doesn't just provide a bunch of desks where people sit and do things on computers that they could have done at home. See how that resentment starts to emerge? Do you see how women start to disengage? And of course, disengagement is the first step to them eventually just leaving the workforce because it doesn't make sense. So
yeah, I love that. The way of looking at it is a cat's out of the bag, because it's true. I mean, I know from personal experience and from other people I've spoken to that not everybody wants a fully remote job. And that's not the point, is that we all just want to never go to an office ever. The point is that we want to feel that if we are spending time, energy, money going to an office, it's even more of that if you have children, so you have to figure out who's going to pick them up or drop them off. Or, you know, not being able to book a dentist appointment in the middle of the day when that's the only slot, right? All the things. We want to feel that it's in service of being in an environment where we're being mentored, trained, you know, engaged, that decisions are happening in the room that couldn't have happened online, that company culture is stronger because of seeing each other in person. If all of those things are true, I do think most people would buy into it. But like you say, either people are being forced in, often to find that their colleagues didn't come in, or to find that they're having Zoom meetings anyway, or to find that the company perks are beanbags and foosball tables or drinks after work, which is something not everybody wants to do, versus, yeah, we're here together building something in person that's so much stronger because we're together, or we're going to give you a training day or whatever. So yeah, it's a really interesting one. And it's another, I believe, push factor for many to work for themselves, because they feel, well, I can't do this. A family member was sort of quote unquote forced out for that reason, because their employer said, look, this is a non-flexible workplace. And this is a big company, like a household name. And, you know, they've been in a really senior role with lots of responsibility, doing really well, and they will have to leave because I need to care for my children, and not all the day, just enough to be able to like have some flexibility, and there was none. So yeah,
choice. There's a whole other topic, and I think it boils down to people wanting choice. They want to be able to have the choice. So just we'll wrap up. Who are your next guests or topics on Monday mornings coming forward? So you've had a stellar 3 months. What's the next 3 to 6 months look like?
Thank you for reading. First of all, I love that you found me through that. It's a really nice feeling to be like, I'm going to put this thing out there and just see if anyone's interested. And luckily, lots of people are, because it's a topic we can all get involved in. So the next section of the publication is on education. is education fit for purpose for the future of work? The interview that's coming out on Monday is with Ed Fido, who set up the London Interdisciplinary School, which is not actually a school, it's a university, the first university since the 60s to get created. And rather than teaching happening in silos, you know, you do maths or you do science or you do literature, the LIS offers multidisciplinary learning, which is what we need to solve the future of work and the world's complex problems. So it's a great interview with Ed coming up. I'm also interviewing a labour economist who talks about the rise of the precariat, which is this idea that we have a new social class in the UK who are underserved. They're not quite working class, they're not quite supported by a system. So that will be really interesting. And I want to continue to explore topics to do with age. I'd love to do one on the aging population, the declining population, how that impacts things like retirement, how that impacts ageism in the workforce, and more on gender, more on generational differences, more on technology, like internet and how that's impacted our careers. So I have so much to say. So yeah, if you're listening, please do subscribe if those topics are interesting.
And where can people find you?
Yeah, so Monday Mornings is a newsletter and you can sign up. It's monday-mornings.beehive.com, which we can link. And I'm also available as a coach, which is my company, The Ask, where I help professionals with entrepreneurial ambition to grow their businesses and to stand out in the online space. So that is theask.uk. And I'm Ellen Donnelly, so you can probably just search for me under there.
Real. We will pop all of that in the show notes. It's the first time I've ever said that. Ellen, thank you so much. That was a really insightful conversation. We really appreciate you joining us.
And thanks to everyone. To our listeners, we're always looking to discover real life Work is Weird Now moments. So please do feel free to share them with us through our Work is Weird Now LinkedIn page. And to everyone, have a wonderfully weird week. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.